Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and I am back in 2013. It feels good to be home back in the studio. So welcome back, y'all. And on today's show, we're kicking off 2013 with the art of the truffle hunt and how to train a dog into finding those deliciously stinky and very pricey truffles. So on today's episode, I'm joined by Alana McGee of Toil and Truffle, a Seattle-based company that helps to train your canine in finding truffles. So Alana, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So you're very well known for your abilities in training American dogs in searching for Oregon truffles and other tasty wild edibles, but I'd love to talk about how you sort of got into this whole project.
Right. So I lived in Italy about 10 years ago, and when I was there, I had a chance to work with some professional truffle hunters for, you know, a brief period of time, and it kind of gave me this bug. You know, it's a very interesting process. And I had been working with dogs and dog training on and off for years, and when I got back to the States, it just kind of became this natural marriage. But what really acted as a catalyst is I had a pet dog who, you know, is a great pet, and I still have him, but he needed a job. And I thought, well, you know, I know we had truffles in this region. I didn't really know much about them at the time. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to just kind of teach him to find stuff and teach him to find truffles? And it turns out he was really good at it. So things just kind of snowballed from there. And then, you know, and now I'm a professional truffle hunter, and we hunt in native stands and on professional plantations all over the country. And we also train dogs for hunting recreationally in the Northwest, and we also train dogs for hunting on some of the European-style plantations that they're planting in the U.S. now.
So before, you know, for listeners out there who maybe aren't so familiar with truffles, you know, there's the European varietals, there's the Perigord, the winter white truffle, or sorry, the Italian white truffle, Burgundy, et cetera. Can you talk about the truffles you find in America and where, like what regions and what states you can find them?
So there are actually hundreds of types of truffles in the U.S. There's only a few really that are of any kind of culinary quality that we want that are in quantities that we can really find. So there's a few types in the U.S. that are commercially harvested. There's one that's found, I know it's found on the East Coast somewhat, and it's found in Texas, where you're from, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And it's called the pecan truffle. And I have never actually tasted those, but they are around. They grow in association with pecan trees, however you say it. And so that's one variety. The kind that we mostly deal with and that you'll see in restaurants more often than not are referred to as the Oregon truffles. And you find, even though they're called Oregon truffles, you'll find them all the way from B.C. down into Northern California. And there's a couple of different varieties. There's the Oregon black truffle, and I'll use the scientific names, too, because when you're talking about truffles, there's so many different types. We want to make sure that everybody is on the same page. So the Oregon black truffle is called Leucangium carthusianum, and then there's a Oregon winter white truffle, which is Tuber oregonensis, And then there's the Oregon kind of spring summer white truffle, which is tuber jubosum. And those are the three main ones that have a lot of culinary value and taste really good. And those all grow in association with Douglas fir trees, basically from the Cascades west. So in B.C. and Washington, that's the Cascades to the coast, and in Oregon, that includes the coastal range, and the same down in Northern California, down to the Bay Area or so.
And how would you describe the aroma and the flavor of those truffles?
Right. So it's really interesting. So the Oregon black truffle is actually a variety that you will find in Europe, too. You can find it there. I don't know how prolific it is in Europe. And it grows on a different host plant. But the black truffles are almost fruity. Sometimes they have a pineapple and a vanilla aroma to them. And every truffle is different. And we're also finding that where you find the truffles, there's an issue of terroir. So, you know, I may find black truffles in one patch that are real kind of vanilla in flavor, and I may find some in another that are kind of pineapple, mango-y in scent. And so that's interesting. So those are used in desserts, I feel like, a lot. And then the Oregon white truffles tend to be more what you think of as like a truffle that you would get from Europe. They're much more umami in flavor, a little more garlicky, a little earthier. Sometimes, and again, this comes from various patches, there's almost a turpentine smell to some of them. Those are not my favorite, but it does come up from time to time. So it's an acquired taste on some of those, but they're really very good. And I know James Beard recently, in the last couple of years, was saying that our native truffles are really just as good as the European varieties. It's just in how they're harvested that, you know, some of the quality is lost.
Yeah, so, you know, tell me about, there's rake harvesting, and, you know, let's talk about the difference between rake versus dogs.
Yes, please. So in the U.S., most of the truffles are harvested via raking, and, you know, this is something that they don't dream of doing in Europe with truffles, and I know in Italy it's prohibited, I think. And there's a couple of reasons for that. You know, when you harvest by raking, you get a lot of truffles, but only one or two of them will actually be ripe at a time, and you'll have a bunch that you can ripen, per se. And I'm using ripen with air quotes here, which you, of course, can see on radio. And, you know, there's some argument as to how much you can ripen truffles, you know, and how that changes their flavor. I equate it to taking a tomato that's unripe and sticking it in the fridge and expecting it to come out with all these awesome flavors, you know, and that doesn't really happen. So when you rake, you get a bunch of truffles that are not really ripe and don't have a lot of culinary value, and they may ripen or they may not. When you use dogs are only trained to find the ripe truffles, and so they're automatically of a superior quality. You know, and the other thing with raking is, there's a couple other downsides to it. When you rake, it really damages the forest. So I've come across some patches when I've been out in the woods, and it's heartbreaking to see. You see these gorgeous Douglas fir trees, and the whole ground just looks like it's been bulldozed. And I know huge swaths of forest, excuse me, down in Oregon have been really damaged from people going in and doing this, usually illegally. And harvesting that way because they won't cover the soil back over the tree roots and the trees will die. And it also hurts the truffle patches because you disturb all the little mycelium, which is how the truffles grow, in the ground, and it basically reduces how many truffles you'll get in future years. So it's really detrimental. And so that's why we like to use dogs. You know, it's fun, first of all. But the dogs can pinpoint where the truffles are and are much less invasive. And you get a superior quality product in the end.
So I'm going to backtrack for a second and say
a lot of info.
No, that was great. You know, for hundreds of years, people were using pigs, more specifically sows, because the truffles, for listeners who don't know, truffles generate a steroid that's like identical to a pheromone produced by boars. So essentially, a female is digging towards loneliness because there's no man there, but she thinks it's a man, and you know, oftentimes she'll be so excited that she eats the truffle, which can obviously be, I can't imagine trying to pry a truffle from a pig. So
yeah, like a 400-pound pig. Yeah. Yeah, neither can the Europeans. That's why they've switched mostly to dogs.
So, you know, I've heard that I'm probably mispronouncing it, but the Legato Romagnolo breed is a really popular breed in Italy. And, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on European truffle dogs, you know, that are prized versus the sort of school of thought in America.
Right. So, you know, when it comes down to training a dog for truffle hunting, all Legatos are great. In general, but it really comes down to personality. So traditionally in Europe, people do use the Legato Romagnolo. It's just one of many dogs they use, but I believe it's the only dog that's kind of bred for that specific purpose. And I actually have a Legato, and she's great. And they're sweet little dogs. They're, for those people who don't know anything about them, because they're a fairly rare breed in the U.S., in North America anyway, they look kind of like small doodles, like doodle mixes, or Portuguese water dogs. You know, and in Europe, they use a lot of Legatos or Legato mixes. They'll use a lot of Labs and Retrievers. But again, it's really all about personality. So any dog can do it to a degree. It's just about how much time and energy and financial resources you really want to put into your dog to achieve a certain goal. So, you know, we have some students who it's breeds people never think their dogs would be able to do this. So we've got a little Havanese student who's amazing, and there's a couple little Corgi mixes who are great, and there's even, you know, a Papillon who's awesome at finding truffles. And these are not dogs you typically would think about as truffle hunting dogs. But it's in how the dog likes to play, or whether they're food motivated, and you know, it's ideal to have a dog that is trainable, but also has this independent streak in it. To have a professional truffle hunting dog, you can't have a dog who's constantly sitting there waiting on its handler's every move and cue. It has to be able to go out in the field and kind of operate it on its own. And Legato are actually very good at that, as a general rule. But I have met a couple Legato who have absolutely no interest in truffle hunting. So again, it's, you know, it's personality based. And, you know, some breeds tend to have certain personalities that are more geared towards it than others. But
is there any possibility that a French bulldog could be trained?
Of course. I have trained one. Yeah. Yeah. No, the brachiocephalic breeds, nobody thinks they can do it. But there's, I have a colleague up in Canada who has a Puggle who's fantastic at it. And he's got a very pushed-in little face, and he's great. So yeah, I love Frenchies. They'd be really fun to take out. It's just, you know, it's a matter of motivation. So
that's encouraging to hear. I feel like Frenchies, at least in New York, they're kind of divas. Like they run this town. So that's exciting to hear that they can do it.
Yep.
Well, tell me about describe the first time that you ever went on a truffle hunt, and what was it like?
So I was in Italy, and the truffle hunt kind of has this magical aura about it. And I was actually there. My family was visiting, and I was the only one who spoke Italian. And, of course, I don't remember much Italian now, but at the time I was fluent. And we were going around with this guy, and he had a Legato who he kept cracking jokes about that I would translate on how his dog was more valuable than his wife and all kinds of things like that. And it was this scruffy little dog running around on this muddy hillside and just finding truffles right and left. And it was just so much fun, and you could smell it in the air. And then we went back to this guy's little house in the countryside, and he shaved them up for us and put them on some food and just let us smell them and try them. And it was just this magical experience. And of course, you're set in the backdrop of these beautiful rolling hills in Italy, and how can you not fall in love with that? So that's really where it started. And then I started going on truffle hunts here in the U.S. with some colleagues down in Oregon. And, you know, if you like being in the outdoors at all, it's a really, really fun activity to do.
How would you describe the difference between hunting in Europe versus in the U.S.? Are there any differences, or is it just sort of terrain that you notice?
There are actually a lot of differences. Most of it does revolve around environment, because when you're hunting in Italy, which is really the only place I've been hunting, although I know it's similar in France and Spain and Croatia, it's these big open-ish fields with trees kind of sparsely plotted throughout, or big oak groves. Here in the U.S., you're usually in dense forest. It's very dark. It's usually in very cold winter months. The general rule is the more miserable it is out, the better truffle hunting it is. So, you know, there's that aspect to it. The philosophies are different. Luckily, in the U.S. right now, there aren't quite as many shady characters in the truffle industry yet. And I say yet because there are some creeping in, and they're, you know, people do harvest illegally in the U.S., and it is becoming a problem. You know, there were a couple guys down in Oregon who somebody came on their property with weapons and things like that, and it, you know, it got to be a dicey situation. And, you know, luckily that hasn't happened too much. But in Europe, people are stealing dogs and poisoning other people's truffle dogs. You know, it's very, very competitive because it's a very lucrative industry in Europe. And it's not quite that way here yet. And I'm thankful for that to some degree.
Sounds like a Guy Ritchie film.
It does. It very much does.
We are going to take a really quick break, but when we get back, we have more from Alana McGee of Toil and Truffle. You're listening to You Look Hungry. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Baldy by Huntronic on the Heritage Radio Network.org. Man, Joe, your computer is so slow, I can't even use this thing.
Yeah, I should probably get a new one. Do you have any suggestions?
Oh, totally, man. You should go to TechServe.
Okay, what's so good about TechServe?
Well, they've got this awesome new insider program that's free when you get a new Mac with AppleCare. So you should buy your computer there because you get 50% off data transfer, free loaner computers, front-of-the-line repair privileges, an annual Mac tune-up service, backup consultation and setup, seminars, and much more.
Okay, yeah, where's TechServe?
It's at 119 West 23rd Street in New York City. They're New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and service provider, and you should totally check out TechServe.com for more information.
All right, that settles it. I'm headed to TechServe.
Every Tuesday at 12 p.m., you can call food scientist Dave Arnold and ask any question you want.
John from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave.
Cooking issues!
Who am I fooling? This is horrible stuff. Without glutamic acid, you die!
It is a matter of taste, but there's a lot more fat in sausage than you think.
Get ahead of the curve. Tune into Cooking Issues every Tuesday at 12 p.m. on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I am still your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm joined today by Alana McGee of Seattle-based company Toil and Truffle. And we are speaking with the wizard of, you know, teaching dogs how to, you know, find truffles. So walk me through sort of first day to, I guess, graduation of truffle canine training school. What happens?
Okay, so, you know, generally what we like to do if somebody's coming to have their dog learn to hunt truffles is we want to set them up with realistic expectations of how their dog will behave. And so we always suggest that people have their dog evaluated beforehand. And this basically just lets the owners know kind of what to expect, how long it might take, you know, if there will be certain challenges that their dog might face that they need to spend more time on. So the first thing you do the evaluation, which is a really simple test, basically, which is just kind of gauging to see if the dog is interested in novel objects and to see if they focus a lot on their owners or not. And then the next step really is scent imprintation. So you give them a truffle, and you train the dog to get a reward every time they smell that truffle. And some dogs pick it up really fast, and some dogs take a little longer. So, you know, a dog can get that in a session, and some dogs it takes several weeks. So practicing, you know, for 5 to 10 minutes in multiple sessions a day. So we work with the owners. Generally, they do a lot of training from home because we're trying to make this, you know, a very bonding experience for them. So you start with scent imprintation, and then it progressively gets harder from there. So you teach the dog to start locating the truffles in a larger area, and then once they've kind of got that down, you can teach them an alert. So this is like you see bomb dogs when they come across a bomb or narcotics dogs at customs, they sit down. You can teach a dog a whole manner of alerts. Sitting down is just one option. And, you know, often I like to teach the dogs to just scratch lightly at the truffle, as it were. So you do that, and then once the dog has mastered that, and again, it can take anywhere from one session to months. It totally depends on the individual. And that's really what we, you know, are set up to help with, is every dog is different. And so, you know, some get things faster than others, and we really want the owners to, you know, take their time with it and be really solid in their foundations. So you do the alerts, and then it gets harder, and you move them outdoors. And you make it easy at first, and then you make it harder and harder and harder, and then eventually you start burying truffles, actual truffles, underground. And then the dog has to find them. And there's a lot of distraction training that goes on in there, and eventually you take them out into the woods, into a setting where there might actually be truffles. And that's really hard for a lot of dogs, because there's squirrels and deer and other people and other dogs and all kinds of things. And so it's a very gradual process that you put them through. And you never want to push a dog too fast. You want to make sure that they're really solid in what they're doing before you move on. And so it can be a very lengthy process. But it just totally depends on the individual. So you start from very basics, and then you move on to going out into the outdoors, into a wild environment. And then by the time that the dogs are locating truffles in that forested setting, you can really start taking them out into the woods on your own, and they'll start finding stuff for you.
I know that in Europe, sometimes they give the dogs Parmesan rinds as like a reward. What do you give them?
Well, it depends on the dog, and this is funny. So one of my dogs really does like cheese, and she goes nuts for it, and that's my Legato, actually. My other dog, he gets meat bits. He gets bacon bits, basically. I tried switching him at one point, and he was going to have none of that. So it was back to various, you know, meat products or hot dogs. Usually something that's very small and easy to give them. You don't want to give large treats. You know, you don't, A, want to fill up your dog, especially if you have a small dog. But it's the act of the reward that the dog is really excited by, not so much the actual food item. Although they love it, but yeah.
Well, and how long do the hunts usually last for the dogs?
Well, so that's the other thing, is the dogs, especially even professional dogs, can't last all that long. It's very mentally tiring, and that's why it's a fun hobby, is because you can take your dog out in the woods, and then they'll be exhausted for the rest of the day. You know, I've had my professional dog out for 6 hours once, and that's a long time. Generally, 2 hours is pretty much tops. You know, you can work anywhere from, you know, 10, 15 minutes. It's like finding a needle in a haystack. And when dogs are out in the woods, they're being bombarded by so many different smells. And that's how dogs see the world, is through smell. So there's all this stuff coming at them, and everything is fascinating. So it's very hard for them to pick out that one scent over and over and over. And so they get mentally fatigued. So, you know, a couple hours generally is how long a hunt will last.
Describe the kind of client that comes to you and wants to have their dog trained.
So we have a whole range. I've had some people who really just want something fun to do with their dog. I had a client whose dog was, unfortunately, she just passed away, but she was 13 years old and blind and just wanted to enrich her dog's life and have something fun for them to do. So we have clients like that, and then we also have people who really want to turn this into a business. And it's not quite the easy money maker that people think it would be. So we have those people who are very, you know, mycophiles and mushroom people who hike a lot and want to go out in the woods with their dogs. So we, you know, we have all ends of the spectrum. And we also have people who are very, you know, are foodies and chefs and think it would just be really fun to do. So we have the whole range.
And you also provide seminars as well.
We do. So in the seminars, it's kind of an introduction to all of this. There's a lot of information that is, we think, good to know before you go out in the woods with your dogs and start hunting. You know, and we're all for people training dogs themselves, too. We're just trying to help people do that, and we're trying to educate. So the seminars really go over all kinds of stuff about our native truffles, from how they grow, how they reproduce, areas where you can find them, you know, harvesting regulations, how to do it in a legal and ethical manner, which is big, and then give you, you know, some basic tips on how to start training your dog. And then if you want, you know, if you want us to help you train your dog, great. That's awesome. But we're really just trying to build a base of dogs in them in the Northwest to try and, you know, educate and make it so people don't go out and rake and harvest that way. So,
you know, in Europe, there's with, you know, the culture of truffles. I mean, yep. It's obviously gone on for centuries. And
yes.
Lord Byron had one on his desk, supposedly, so he could have inspiration. He would smell it. You know, Louis XIV had a mistress who would eat it,
yes.
Yada, yada, yada. Anyway, I know that it's been kind of a patriarchal mm-hmm. culture in that, you know, oftentimes a truffle hunter doesn't reveal their plot until their
right.
deathbed to usually
right.
their sons.
Right.
And, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the American versus European philosophy of truffle culture, because they are very different cultures. And how do you see it playing out in the future?
Well, that's an interesting question. In the U.S., you know, what I specifically, and I can't speak for all the other professional handlers, you know, we are very private, and it's a very solitary business to some degree, but we are much more open, I think, in the U.S. We're much more interested in making this a transparent truffle industry, as opposed to what it is in Europe, where it is very much, you know, passing down knowledge from father to son. You know, I hope that we can make it in the U.S. so that the knowledge is kind of generally shared. And you can still protect your truffle spots, you know, specifically, but we want people, again, to do it in a way that's sustainable and not have a lot of negativity and darkness and kind of mafia undertones surrounding it. So, you know, right now in the U.S., people are still pretty guarded, but there's a group of us, and all the professional handlers really know each other. There aren't that many of us. You know, and we're willing to share ideas and share what we find and be very almost collegiate about it and not compete necessarily, but try to work together and build a community. And I think, and I hope that's where our industry is going. You know, it's really a small industry at the moment. And so we're just trying to build it from the ground up, and hopefully we can maintain that.
I can't think of another edible food that's more mysterious and elusive and why it's so alluring to people. In your words, how would you describe why you love truffles?
It is the mystery. It is the excitement behind it. And you know, the taste doesn't hurt. the allure of just something that is from the earth. I'm very into, you know, sustainable living and working with nature, and very into the wild world, as it were. So it's hard to distill it down into one or two words, but just kind of the mystery and the fabulousness of truffles.
Do you have, you know, Oregon Black are in season right now. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite yes. recipe for how you like to eat them?
You know, this is going to sound weird. I do. People are going to think I'm kind of crazy. So they're actually really good on ice cream. So I don't know if you've ever tried, and these work really well with the ones that are fruity. If you've ever tried, like, really nice balsamics on, like, vanilla ice cream, it's the same kind of principle, where you just put a little bit of shaved black Oregon truffle just on that. If you can heat it a tiny bit beforehand so it can really release a little bit of that aroma and then put it on, that'd be perfect. Just saute it for literally like 30 seconds and then put it on your ice cream. It's actually really good.
That sounds amazing.
It's weird, but it's actually, I like it, so...
I feel like Cesar Millan should pair up with you to have a whole new show because honestly, this could be like a really big thing. But you know, will you be participating in the upcoming Oregon Truffle Festival?
We are. We are not necessarily participating, but we're going to be down there for it. We're going that, and there's also a festival down in Napa as well. Right before that, that's coming up in it's around the 18th, I believe, that weekend. Is that the weekend? Yeah. So we're going to be down there, and we went to the one last year, too, and I recommend it for anybody who's interested. It's really an eye-opener. There's a lot of truffles. it's kind of truffle overload, and you might be sick of them by the end of the weekend, but it is a very fun experience.
Well, if you would like to send your dog to Canine Truffle School or actually purchase some truffles, visit toilandtruffle.com or call up Miss Alana, and she will wow you with all kinds of amazing knowledge. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And as always, thanks so much to Joel Galarraga, Jack Inslee, and the rest of the crew at Heritage Radio and Roberta's. Happy New Year, and I'll see y'all next week.
Let's go out to eat.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.